This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9. In the meantime, looking at something that has been extremely volatile, and that is Bitcoin, because it traded at its lowest levels since December after China intensified its crackdown.
That's right. And Bitcoin actually fell below US dollars 30,000 yesterday. But it did recover overnight. Currently, it's trading at about 32,000 US dollars. It's a volatile, you know, Bitcoin is volatile. We all know that. So China's latest actions came on Monday when the nation's central bank said it had summoned officials from the biggest lenders, as well as Alipay, to reiterate a ban on cryptocurrency services.
Yeah, it's not just Bitcoin, though. All the entire crypto universe has hit the doldrums. Ether is down 27% on the year to 1,856. Doge has gone to the dogs. It's 18 cents and down 36% on the year-to-date basis. So, I mean, clearly the question is, what's going on in the crypto world?
Yeah. So for some insights into the crypto space, we have on the line with us Varun Mittal, who's the global emerging markets fintech leader at EY. Good morning, Varun. Now, it's well known that China isn't particularly very hospitable to cryptocurrency trading or mining. But I want to know, what's the reason for this current crackdown?
The premise is there are two parts to this. One part is speculation and retail investors, because as you mentioned, if the movements are too big, there are a lot of retail investors who probably can be misguided, misled to buy some things which they do not fully understand, and they may lose money, which creates more problems socially. So one part of which all regulators, not just a specific country, have been to look at what is the speculation about and how to protect the interests of retail investors. And by the nature of decentralized, there is not a central person they can go after. There is no central issuer of specific cryptocurrency in most cases. So which is why they have to go after the other side, which is the demand side, which is either the wallets or exchanges or the lenders, to bring control on the speculation and the frenzy about it. And the other part is also because there is strong push towards clean energy sustainability, and the amount of energy usage for mining of few of this was taking up significant amounts of energy, and which does not go well with the planning infrastructure, and the infrastructure is expensive and it is done to support the lives of people, family, agriculture, industry, instead of this. So if too much of an energy is diverted out, it impacts the balance which the infra and the planners have set out at initially to manage and hold.
But Varun, do you think this is also related to the fact that cryptocurrencies by nature are very opaque, and it's something that the Chinese government perhaps is uncomfortable with?
The premise is the cryptocurrencies were designed, so I would say that's a feature, not a bug. They were designed to be like that. And for example, if you were to look at some of the stable coins, they are probably not as opaque. If the fiat currency which they represent is fully visible and known, then they are not as opaque. So I would say some cryptocurrencies are more opaque than less, and that's by design. And any financial regulator will be concerned about assets or whichever, whether they want to call themselves payment token, utility token, security token, if they do not have understanding on the movements, understanding of drivers. If they identify that somebody posting something on a social network can move an asset prices by 30-40%, there are, in traditional sense, if you were to look at, if a security prices goes down because of some information movement, they can query the person and ask them the background of that. Here, there is nobody to go after from that perspective. So, which is why it's a new world. And regulators are right in their position to try to protect the common retail investor. If large institutions are buying and selling something, they're supposed to know what they're doing. But it's the common retail investor who regulators everywhere are trying to protect.
What's your sense of whether the PBOC in China, Arun, is suspicious of Bitcoin, which, you know, obviously might be a threat to its designs and wanting to be the next global currency, global reserve currency?
See, in the introduction itself, you mentioned a lot of other cryptocurrencies, and all of them have very different ambitions of being some level of global coverage and penetration. So, which is why from central bank's perspective, they would want to manage the
what we call it, the first level of money supply, and which is why several countries have started to have their CBDCs, which is the central bank digital currencies. So their view is that if the market and the use case and the economies need digital currencies, then we are central bank, it's our job to do it, we will issue central bank digital currency. So, which is why if somebody is trying to create a new world order without having tested through all the things, proven it, and appends the existing world order which is working, then there would be expectations of more credibility and proof before the new world order can be embraced with open arms.
So, Varun, I want to ask, what are the long-term repercussions of China's current crackdown for crypto markets? I mean, we've seen prices dip since the last announcement this week, but will this be a sustained trend, or do you see other factors that will buoy the price moving forward, like Elon Musk, for example?
See, the premise is prices are range-bound. People say that, okay, it's lower than, it's the lowest this year. But if you look at a 12-year horizon, it's double than what it was 1 year ago. So which is why it's all, that's always a factor of what time horizon you're going to look at it. And if you look, say, okay, if I'm going to look at 5-year horizon, then the answer is very different. So I would not focus as much on the short-term movement. It's a question of if people believe that these kind of technology solutions or further derivatives of this. I usually give an example. Early 2000s, you would remember peer-to-peer music sharing websites, which were then sued and they shut down. But the premise was that you should not have to buy every music if you want to hear it only 2 times or 3 times, and you should be able to share. Now what you have is video and audio streaming websites who do this legally, which is probably second or third generation of something which started as a peer-to-peer file sharing concept in early 2000s. So the premise is some of these concepts will be valuable long-term, either in this shape or their second or third generation versions. So I would not focus as much on the short-term movement. Of course, there are some people who would look at it as a speculation asset, but then those people have different flavors. A few months back, they had wood and lumber. Now I was seeing on Twitter that tomatoes were the flavor, that tomatoes prices were being speculated. So speculators will find something. If you don't have cryptocurrency, they will find something else.
That's right. So Varun, how would you explain that divergence in approach in central banks? For example, El Salvador, that small that country which is, you know, approved cryptos for legal tender. How would you explain this divergent approach among central banks?
It's very simple. I would look at the larger countries, larger economies, their approach amongst them. So if you would move the frame of lens to the larger economies, more diverse, bigger economies, their lenses are not too different. The smaller economies have their own constraints. They have small money supplies. They would have their own reasons to do it. So doing it in a village versus doing it in a country or doing it in like a country of few million versus few hundred million are very, very different scenarios. And the premise is if you would have like 20, 30, 40 countries doing it, then we would have a different conversation. If it's a one outlier, then I don't see one outlier as a benchmark for the world. World has 200 plus countries.
All right. Thank you for your time. Excuse me. That was Varun Mittal, Global Emerging Markets FinTech Leader at EY, giving us his views on Bitcoin, basically saying that there are very divergent views in terms of how Bitcoin should be regulated or accepted. Now, for China, clearly taking a paternalistic stance, they want to protect their retail investors. But if you ask me, it's also because it's something they can't control.
I don't think the environment and their people are topmost in their priorities.
Well, for them, their priority is
to be the sarcastic, no, not sarcastic, cynical
for them,
person.
Control is important, right? Yeah. And social unrest is something they don't want to. For them, it's the worst fear, which is why they've also been clamping down on shadow banking. In their mind, maybe they see cryptos as a form of shadow banking.
Yeah, I mean, they want their CBDC to be topmost, right? They want the digital yuan to be topmost. But, you know, there is valid concern, right? The entire crypto market, by way of capitalization, is worth about $1.5 trillion, right? Someone like Elon Musk, who is worth an order of magnitude much higher than that on a multiple basis, he can move entire cryptos on his own single tweet.
Yes.
So there's something inherently wrong about that as well.
Yeah, it's it. Well, when you think about it, right, isn't that partially because there is no fundamental, or there are very few fundamentals when it comes to cryptocurrencies, correct, except for demand and supply?
I'm going to be interested to see whether China's current crackdown will actually have, what kind of effect it's going to have on crypto activity in China. Because when you think about it, it's been going on for a while, but up to 3/4 of the world's supply of Bitcoin is still being produced in China, at least just before this crackdown happened. So I'm just wondering whether, you know, if people want to get involved, they may just find a way anyway, regardless of how many penalties or restrictions you have.
Yeah, the farms are moving out of China and into America, actually. And some states in America are offering tax breaks for that as well.
Stay tuned for that, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.